When ours was a mostly agrarian country, Americans had control of their food system. We didn't have to be encouraged to eat local. That's all there was. The growth of industrial food production changed all that, and for many observers, health problems followed. Anna LaPay, author of Diet for a Hot Planet, The Climate Crisis at the End of Your Fork and What You Can Do About It, has made food safety and a return to sustainable farming practices her crusade. She's in Hawaii to work with local food safety advocates, and she's here in our studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How did this become an issue for you, kind of your focus of what I described as a crusade?
Sure. Well, I guess in a way I sort of went into the family business. My mother and father were both environmental activists. My mother, Frances Moore LaPay, wrote a book in 1971 called Diet for a Small Planet.
Sold
3.5 million copies, and yeah. I met many people along the way who were really moved by her work to think differently about the root causes of hunger and understand that hunger isn't caused by a scarcity of food, but it's caused by a scarcity of democracy, of people not having control over what's being grown on the land. Is it food we can eat directly, or is it an industrial product that goes into the belly of cows or the belly of cars?
We've seen that in other countries beside our own, producing food for export, for cash sale, and then kind of leaving the people right in that region behind.
Yeah, we see it. We see it across the United States, and I've been spending some time while I've been here on Kauai, and spent some time driving across the island of Hawaii and seeing the testing grounds for chemical pesticides. And what's being grown there isn't testing food products; they're testing corn that again will end up either as an industrial product in cars for biofuels or in industrial animal livestock production.
Those efforts are being touted as efforts to feed the world.
Yes, and they have been touted that way since, in the case of genetically modified organisms, they were first introduced commercially in 1996, and we've been hearing the promises that these are going to be products that feed the world ever since the first commercialization. And what's been really clear is when you look at what are the technologies that have been engineered in these new genetic engineering practices, you see that the crops that have been commercialized, they're not food crops. They are, like I said, these commodities, corn, soy, commodities that are going to feed cars or going to feed livestock. And for the most part, nearly all of the genetic engineering we have seen have really been products to promote chemical pesticides. They've either been engineered to resist a chemical herbicide or engineered to express an insecticide. And what I've seen, not just around the country, but really in my travels around the world, are communities all around the world saying the kind of cutting-edge technology we need is a kind of technology that will free us from toxic pesticides and will create the abundant food that we need.
One of the arguments that is advanced by proponents of that kind of approach to food production is that the small-scale organic farms, you know, regional farming, just does not operate at the kind of scale mm-hmm. to feed a hungry world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we certainly hear that argument. And what is lost in that argument, frankly, is the facts on the ground. So the United Nations has done an incredible amount of study of where are the best food-producing regions and who's doing that food production. And they've found that globally, 70% of the world's food comes from small-scale farmers producing real food. And in certain countries, it's as much as 80 or 90% of the food is being produced by small-scale producers. And a couple of years ago, the United Nations, the World Bank, a number of institutions commissioned what I see as like the gold standard study exploring this exact question. And it's like the best study no one's ever heard of. The acronym is the IAASTD, or the ISTAD report. And what those researchers found, more than 400 researchers from 60 countries, they found that looking at this question of how are we going to feed the world, they found the surest way to do that is to support production practices that build soil health naturally, that deal with insects without having to bring toxic pesticides to the fields, that are what are known internationally as agroecological solutions. And these experts said that is the way we're going to feed the future.
So why haven't we been told this?
Well, that is a great question. It's something I've been very curious about. In fact, colleagues of mine at the international group called Friends of the Earth published a report called Spinning Food a couple of years ago. And what we did in that report is followed the dollars mm-hmm. and looked at just how much money is being spent by some of the biggest chemical companies in the world on messaging and marketing in these very, what we called, very stealth tactics. So tactics like, for instance, we found that some of the biggest chemical groups were spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year funding groups that are known as front groups. So they're organizations that sound like they work for the public interest, but really they're just promoting these messages from industry. So there are groups like the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, which says that it represents, you know, U.S. farmers and ranchers. You dig a little beneath the surface and you realize it's really being funded by some of the biggest agrochemical companies in the world to really push this message that we need their products, whether it's the chemicals or, say, the antibiotics used in livestock production, which, again, goes up against the real research we've seen from public institutions.
Well, the problem, and for the food consumer, which is everybody, right, is who to believe. I mean, the presentation you just described sounds every bit as coherent as yours, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And so from the point of view of the public, you know, sounds great. Mm-hmm. Why should I believe you instead of them? I mean, I've had one of Monsanto's chief scientists on the show, and it was an extremely credible presentation. Who do you believe? And on what basis do you make that choice?
Sure. And I think that that's such a healthy approach. We should all be skeptical consumers, whether we're skeptical consumers of food or skeptical consumers of the media about
food. Of information,
right?
Yeah.
And I would say, for me, my litmus test is, you know, in whose interest is the person speaking? And whose interest is the institution working? And I will fully admit, what's my bias here? My bias is healthy food for my children, and that's my bias. And my bias is a healthy environment for my community, and that's my approach and bias. And I will fully admit that that's the lens through which I work. Now, when you hear an executive speak from a chemical company, when they take their chemical company hat off at home, they might have a different bias, but they're being paid every day to speak on behalf of the industry and the products that they're selling. And so when I think about the groups that I've been connecting with here on the islands, groups like the Hawaii Alliance for Progressive Action or Hawaii Seed, I wanted to know, why should I trust you and what's your bias? And their bias is protecting the communities, protecting community economies, protecting community environment, protecting community health.
Well, your opponents describe their bias as feeding a hungry world that is not in a position to feed itself, which is a pretty benign goal, right? And, you know, no one is going to describe their bias in other than glowing terms.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's where I really rely on the experts in the field. So toxicologists, epidemiologists, public health officials, agronomists. I myself am a generalist. And what I have really been really persuaded by is the incredible, ample evidence we have about the human health and environmental health impacts of the pesticides that are being tested today on, say, Kauai, which is really ground zero for testing of these new agricultural chemical pesticides. And when you look at that evidence and you look at the peer-reviewed journals, which, again, I think is kind of one of those great sources of information, I think we're seeing a lot of red flags about these chemicals. And I think the kinds of regulation that your community are talking about wanting to have, things like buffer zones around schools and communities, things like disclosure where these chemical companies would be forced to tell us what are they spraying and when are they spraying it? Those are the kind of common sense regulations that I think we could all get behind.
Anna, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Anna LaPay is the founder and director of Real Food Media, a collaborative communications initiative, and the author of Diet for a Hot Planet, The Climate Crisis at the End of Your Fork and What You Can Do About It.